our Free Agency Week on the Huddle and Flow podcast, which is brought to you by Intuit, the proud makers of QuickBooks, TurboTax, and Mint. I am Steve White, here with my dude Jim Trotter, two-thirds of the Howard University mob, our producer Thomas Warren on the ones and the twos. He completes the HU puzzle, and JT. The free agency is off to its blast. And New England Patriots, a team that we usually see sit on its hands, oh, they saw Tom Brady and the Buccaneers win a championship through free agency, so they thought that they would follow suit.
Yeah, I think Bill didn't like sitting out those playoffs, did he?
No.
But look, Steve, let's say this. Let's cut to the chase here. For me, I see all of the moves that the Patriots have made. And number one, we see every year in free agency all the moves that don't work out, and fan bases get excited when the signings are made and all of that. For me, everything comes down to the Patriots too. What's their quarterback play going to be like? Yep. And I know they signed Cam, but I'm not convinced yet that Cam's going to be their starter opening day. I know that they've talked to other clubs just to see what other clubs are thinking about their quarterback situation. So my gut feeling is that Cam is a safety net for them. But even if he is the starter, they still have a lot of work to do to get that team ready. And losing, Joe Thuney on that offensive line, who was their best player.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And they're banking on Trent Brown regaining the form he had when he was last there, which is a major gamble at this point, particularly after you trade away Cannon. So while I see all the moves, I'm still not ready to say yet that the Patriots are the division favorite at this point. I still think Buffalo is that, and I still think Miami's coming.
I'm with you 100%. Because even when I see them sign Nelson Aguilar and Kendrick Bourne at wide receiver, those are two small guys. I don't think N'Keal Harry's going to be there. I think it's just shown that it is not working in New England. If they can find a trade partner, I think they're going to find a way to get him out there and see what they can do. So we'll see. No coach thinks that he can't fix something, but the Patriots – taking a path they haven't taken since like early 2000 when they signed more than 20 unrestricted free agents. And that led to them getting to their first Super Bowl championship in the Belichick era. But that's a term. But Jim, a lot of other teams, you mentioned Joe Thuney. He goes to the Chiefs. Great pickup. Okay. Excellent pickup. But we've seen some other teams kind of sit on their hands. None of them, the Cowboys, the Falcons, teams like that. That's not unexpected. The Seahawks. But Jim, the Raiders. We see them go out and they make a splash. They know they need to pass rush, and they go out and get Yannick Ngakoue, who was drafted by New Vegas DC Gus Bradley back in Jacksonville. You're laughing. What's up? What's going on?
Because the Raider fans, Raider Nation is going to say that I'm hating on them and whatnot. But the one thing I don't trust about the Raiders is John Gruden and free agency. Go back to his very first year when he rejoined the club in 2018. And I know Mike Mayock's the GM, but we know who calls the shots there.
Right.
In 2018, when Reggie McKenzie was still there, their two big free agent signings were Jordy Nelson for $13 million. He retired after a year. Also linebacker Tahir Whitehead, $6.28 million. He was cut in 2010, 2 years later. Then you go to 2019. Think about all these guys they signed, big money guys in free agency. Trent Brown, $36.25 million. He ends up getting traded this year. Tyrell Williams, $44 million over 4 years, $10 million guaranteed. He gets cut. LaMarcus Joyner, $21.3 million, $21 million guaranteed. He gets cut. Antonio Brown, you trade a third and a fifth for him. He never plays a down for you. Jason Witten, you paid $4.75 million for what? Leadership? So, then you go to 2020. Corey Littleton, you give him a $35 million contract, $22 million guaranteed. Talk to me. Carl Nassib, $16.75 million. He's all right, but he ain't worth that. So now you want me to get excited because they signed Yannick Ngakoue? I'm sorry. I just can't. What do they say about history? They will tell you the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. And we've seen what's happened with the Raiders in the past in free agency. And the sad part is they have had all these draft picks after dealing away Khalil Mack and Amari Cooper And yet, while some of these rookies have played well, they still have yet to have a winning season.
Yeah, because we all thought they were going to be there last year. But, Jim, I mean, come on, Nelson Aguilar balled out, but, oh, yeah, he's with the Patriots now.
and he wasn't a big money signing.
No.
That's what I'm saying to you. When they go out and spend a lot of money on free agents, inevitably, it appears, it blows up in their face. That's all I'm saying.
And you made a good point about big money signings because, you know, we see the Jets with all of this money and high draft picks. So we think they're going to go out and be players in free agency. They're like, nope, nope. We are not building this thing through free agency. We're going to go ahead and get it through the draft because the biggest indicator of what's going to happen in teams' plans is the first 2 days of free agency. And the fact that they did not go in head first goes to show you this is going to be a slow process in how they're going to build this team.
Look, this is just me now. I am convinced that they are going to move Sam Darnold. And I am convinced because they will get a quarterback in the draft on a rookie contract in year one versus being in a position in a rebuild where they have to pay Sam, make a decision on a fifth-year option. They don't want to do that yet when they know they're rebuilding. And if they feel there's a young quarterback who is as good or better, then it makes more sense to go sign him, get him started on that rookie deal now while you are rebuilding. And I know that they have made calls to teams, asking teams about their interest in Sam. So I am convinced, doesn't mean that I'm right, but I am convinced that they are going to move Sam Darnold before this draft. As you say, get more draft equity to build this thing the right way through the draft.
Got to find somebody who likes him. So that's going to be an interesting thing.
Oh, there are teams. Trust me.
I would think so. I would. I like him. I mean, I think he's a good player. If he gets in the right system and the right quarterback coach, I think he could be, you know, a heck of a player. And, you know, maybe he can have a resurgence like Ryan Tannehill. Again, the example of the guy who has a resurgence. And also, Jim, we're gonna talk about some things as we get through the show. But this is kind of a special show we've put together for you guys. You know, typically we interview someone and we're coming off one of the greatest interviews we've had with Houston Texans coach David Culley. And we appreciate all of the so much attention being paid to this. And that goes to show you what a good story will do, not just an issue or something like that. But we're going to put kind of a best of show together for you guys. But these are kind of some of the interviews we've had throughout the season that kind of predicted and foreshadowed some of the moves that we see going on right now. So, Jim, let's go ahead and get started with some of these interviews. Well, Saints quarterback and future Hall of Famer Drew Brees, he retired at the end of the season. But earlier, when we spoke to Saints head coach Sean Payton, he pretty much telegraphed this move, and he telegraphed who could be the heir apparent.
I and we as an organization love what we've seen from Jameis, and that constantly weighs in your mind relative to each game. Going into the season, all three of the quarterbacks knew that in the event that there were any injury during a game, Jameis was coming in. Taysom was going to have a large plan in special teams and at tight end, and then we would go from there. And so when that situation arose and Drew was hurt for a longer period of time, I visited with Jameis, I visited with Taysom. I had basically given Taysom my word in the offseason that, hey, this is long before Jameis even arrived, that he would have that opportunity as the two coming back here. That being said, he's being evaluated each week. I've been proud of how that room has handled it. Jameis particularly, because he's a competitor and he wants that opportunity. And listen, I feel like I said it a week ago, I feel like our next quarterback's in the building. And one of the attractions for Jameis, and I understand it, was there aren't many places in free agency where you can go to a team and have a pretty good bet that that quarterback like Drew is going to be playing in his last year. You know, that doesn't exist. You go to a team and then, you know, hey, you're going to look for that opportunity to sometime be a starter. He's going to have that opportunity the minute Drew leaves, and both he and Taysom know that.
Brees had a great career, but he was overshadowed by Tom Brady. And here's the key with Brady. He signed as a free agent with the Bucs. And what we learned from that is by hitting on the right free agent, the major impact it could have on your club. As we heard from defensive coordinator Todd Bowles and offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich.
This may sound crazy, but the biggest thing I found about Tom, other than his work ethic and his diligence and his precision to be the best, he makes everyone else feel important and feel like superstars. You know, you have superstars that will sign some autographs and walk off. You have guys that will be to themselves and everything else. He can laugh at himself, and he can go up to a scout team guy or walk off with a defensive guy or an offensive guy, and they can talk football. And by the time you finish talking to him, you will feel like you're helping him as opposed to him helping you. I mean, he has the most uncanny knack for his people skills are outstanding. The way he includes everyone and everything that they do and channels it into football, into what they do, is like nothing I've ever seen. I mean, the person in football far outweighs the player in football.
Tom's a different type of superstar. I mean, within the first day of camp, guys are already joking with him in a way that you wouldn't joke with a six-time champ or the guy that they call the GOAT, you know?
Give us an example. Give us an example.
Like, Shade called him six-time. like it was the nicknames that he was, you know, he was just one of the guys sitting amongst the guys. And COVID made it so different, so we were separate. But when we did get the opportunity to get together, it was just amazing to see him amongst his teammates.
Well, the Bucs won their championship during a pandemic that impacted the entire season, both on and off the field. So what was it like playing under the cloud of COVID-19? Arizona Cardinals wide receiver Larry Fitzgerald and Rams cornerback Jalen Ramsey explained.
Oh, so much. So I would say the better team most likely is going to win. The home field advantage means nothing. You know, you go playing. I mean, it's no different from, like, I can go over here and play in this park, or I cross the street and play in the park here. I mean, there's nothing that's different about it. You know, no silent count. You know, if there's miscommunication, you literally can – the coach can just yell it out to you on the field. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, the speed of the game is still the same, but in terms of just communicating, the pressure is nowhere near as high as it would be with the crowd. You know, there's not as many eyes on you. So I think it's way easier for younger players to go out and play now. You know, so it's a lot different.
For us, especially, you open up a new stadium that you know would be packed out, like Sunday Night Football, first game, Dallas Cowboys. Like, certain, you know, games you know will be packed out. You feed off that energy. You really do. And this year you didn't have that. The only game, you know, that we played that had fans was Miami, Tampa, and our playoff game in Green Bay. They're limited fans. We could feel like, dang, like, I hear a little something. Like, I feel a little something. They making plays, and they fans turning up, and they building off that. They got that energy. They got that juice going. And without that, you got to have guys on your team who bring that own energy and that bring their own juice. And then that can be infectious and spread throughout the whole team. So luckily, you know, we had guys on the team who could do that and make plays that would be like, get the whole sideline turned up, and we could build off that. But it definitely could have been even more if we had a sold out SoFi Stadium. I know that for sure.
Steve, we don't know yet what the 2021 season is going to look like in terms of stadiums being open for fans and whatnot. But one thing we do know is that it's very possible we could have another virtual offseason. As we heard from NFLPA Executive Director Damaris Smith and Union President J.C. Treader.
I think unless there is an extremely high likelihood that everyone in the country would be vaccinated to reach the 85% that we need for herd immunity. Unless we think that that's going to occur, or we will arrive there by the beginning of the season, I think daily testing is probably something that we will at least start the season with this year.
If our performance historically was here, and we had during a 10-week offseason program, and we had a 0 week offseason program, and our performance was at worst equal, if not better, by what I said, then clearly there's no real value add to a program that's not providing any benefit when it comes to performance. So that's something we're dealing with now, is figuring out how to continue to follow the science and make a program that is a value add, will help our young players, will help our veteran players, will help the teams perform. And that should be the focus, not just, well, now that COVID might be out of the woods, we might be out of the woods with COVID, let's just fall back on what we always did because we always did it. We can't think that way. And it would be a shame to think that way after everything we've been through this year.
You know, as we're already seeing this offseason, talk about quarterback movement is going to dominate the spring and the summer. We've already seen some quarterbacks on the move, but the biggest storyline is down in Houston, where Deshaun Watson does not want to be part of the team. But one of our greatest interviews that we've had, Jim, has been with his new head coach, David Culley, and here he is on Deshaun Watson's future, possibly in Houston, but possibly not.
He is our starting quarterback as of right now. He is our starting quarterback. Things happen between now and then, and then we'll see what happens. We're moving forward. You know, we're moving forward. And all our conversations have been with all of our players here is that we are moving forward. And that we're going to go forward, and we're going to go forward with everybody that is in, all in with us, that wants to go. And I like to think, and I feel like that as we move forward, as we're going to move forward all in with everybody that's all in with us. And I feel like that everybody's going to be all in, including him, including everybody else that's been here, that we're moving forward and we're going with it, and we're going to go with that way.
Another quarterback rumored to possibly be on the move is Russell Wilson in Seattle. Now, earlier this season, we had GM John Snyder on when Russ was cooking, tearing up the league as an MVP frontrunner candidate. And here's what he had to say about his quarterback.
We'd be remiss not to ask you about Russell Wilson right now. And it's easy for everyone to be on his bandwagon right now, but based on conversations you and I had had even before the draft, I know you were on the table for him from Jump Street. Did you envision back then, even when you were so supportive and like what you saw, that he would develop into what we're seeing today?
I can't say honestly that I did. I know that he had all the factors of and the traits of the Brett Favre and the Rich Gannons and the Aaron Rodgers, and he had those traits. You could literally go down the whole list and go down your own checklist and say the only thing that he didn't have was the hype. And is he able to make those throws? But to say that, that he'd be at this level, I can't say that. I knew he'd be a damn good player. But every year he seems to, set higher standards for himself.
Well, the draft is right around the corner. And we know quarterbacks are the deepest position, maybe the most talented position at the front end of the draft. And there are two teams, the Falcons and Lions, who already have established quarterbacks, Matt Ryan in Atlanta and Jared Goff, the new quarterback in Detroit. Well, that doesn't mean they're necessarily going to be their quarterbacks in their respective cities for long. And we spoke about that with new Falcons general manager Terry Fontenot and new Lions general manager Brad Holmes. What kind of chip is it to be at that number four spot?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's so valuable, and it's so exciting to be right there, because you're right. We don't want to ever be picking in the top five again. We want to be picking at the bottom of the rounds, of all the rounds. So it's really valuable, and we're in a position that, hey, we can take. We want to build this roster the right way, and we're going to think long term. So nothing's really off the table, whether you talk about taking the best player on the board or moving down, or I think everything's wide open. And so it's a great spot to be in, and we want to make sure we maximize that and have a hell of a draft, because we don't expect to be there anymore.
And your evaluations and everything, and just kind of looking at what you guys, you and Dan and Ray and everybody want to build there, this draft, are you necessarily out of the quarterback market?
Oh, no, I would. No, absolutely not. You know, I don't think when you're picking this high that you can be out on any position. But obviously quarterback is such an important position. And, you know, I just think it's good drafting business always to be very, very thorough on that quarterback class, regardless of what your situation is. You know, always when I was with the Rams, always said that, you know, always regardless of what you had at quarterback, and then even especially now, you know, it's the same approach. And, you know, it is a good crop coming out this year, but, you know, it's definitely not a position that will be ignored by us by any means.
Steve, one quarterback who will not be on the move is Buffalo's Josh Allen. And earlier we had on wideout Stephon Diggs talking about his new best friend in Buffalo.
When you got a new quarterback, he likes things done a certain kind of way, and you kind of got to get used to him, and he got to get used to you. So that's one thing attributed to Josh. He put a lot of time in, as far as like not having an off season. When we hit training camp, we tried to hit the ground running. We had so many Zoom calls. We had plenty of talks. But when we got into that practice field, it was rep after rep trying to get better. We're still doing it now. But specifically in training camp, he made it a point of emphasis that he always strives to be perfect. That's something that I love about him. And he's super hard on himself. So for me, I tell Superman, you can't be Superman every day, all day. You know, so he tries to be perfect. So I try to be there to kind of meet him in the middle, be like, it's all right. You know what I'm saying? If I drop a ball, I'm not going to apologize. So don't apologize.
Jim, that was some great stuff from Stephon Diggs, but his replacement in Minnesota, Justin Jefferson, came in as a rookie and lit it up. So here's our conversation with Justin about his expectations coming into the league and the mark he made in his rookie season.
What were you truly feeling as you looked at those players come off the board and you're there knowing what you're capable of doing?
I mean, I took it in as you know, just me. I just kept a chip on my shoulder, if you want to say that. You know, I just felt like I was one of the top receivers, and you know, especially off of the performance that I did with a national championship, and you know, having over 1,500 yards and having 18 touchdowns. So being the fifth receiver picked up, I felt like that was disrespectful on their part. So I just wanted to prove everybody wrong. All of the doubts that me not being able to play outside, me not being a fast receiver, me not being able to go deep. So you know, this past season I worked on all of those things. I just tried to clean up my game a little bit more and be that versatile receiver.
Jim, those interviews were so great. And I know in the moment they were real timely, right? When everybody was, we were kind of going through these during the season. But now that you reflect back on it, it's like, whoa, okay, they were telling us something that kind of played out one way or the other and kind of foreshadowed and kind of tipped to maybe some of the things that we're seeing right now. So it's cool. We're going to do some more of these best of type shows, some of these compilations, because, you know, we've got some real humorous ones, like some of the stories that, you know, Todd Bowles has doubled over, and Kimberly Martin, some of the stories that we had with her and with Jemele Hill and Kerry Champion. So we're going to have a bunch of these best of type shows. But Jim, you know, when you think about, we started this podcast in September, and just some of the great stories that we've heard and some of the great news that we've heard and things like that, it was just really cool to bring our, you know, the growing audience that we hear from, that interact with us, some of these cool stories. So I really, really hope they took a lot from that. We're like, whoa, Sean Payton said that? I don't remember that, but now that we're seeing this, I get it. You know, I really appreciate some of the stuff that we were able to bring them.
Yeah, the thing that stands out to me, Steve, is I just find it sort of ironic. Maybe ironic's too strong a word, but I find it interesting that, you know, 3 years ago, we brought this idea to the network to do this podcast, and basically the idea was allowed to die on a vine. Never got jump-started. And then in the summer of George Floyd, when all of a sudden everybody was searching for a way to show their enlightenment or their wokeness, you know, they came to us and asked us if we were still interested in doing this 3 years later. And my personal opinion is I believe they thought there wasn't an audience for this show back 3 years ago. And I want to thank all the listeners for proving that there is an audience for this and that they are interested in what we have to say and what our guests have to say. So, again, all thanks to the audience for proving you and me right. So
I love it. I love, look, the collaboration we have here, and I'm going to include Thomas Warren, our producer, on this. We have shown that having smart conversations, using our experience, getting guests on who enjoy coming on with us too. Like, okay, because now people know, you know, okay, we're coming on with Jim and Steve. You know, it's going to be a highbrow conversation that can go in any direction. Let's go have some fun with it. You know, again, the appreciation we have for everybody who has a hand in making this happen is absolutely fantastic. So props to Thomas Warren, props to everybody for coming on the show. And again, thanks to the audience. And again, this is coming off the heels of that David Culley interview, and the reaction to that, the response to that has been magical. And we can't thank you enough. So Jim, why don't you take us home on the first edition of the Best of the Huddle of Love?
Well, once again, we want to thank you all for listening. We want to thank you for subscribing. Please continue to leave us messages about who you want to hear from, what you want to hear about. And that way, we can continue to give you more of what you're funking for.
All right. And the Huddle Flow podcast is brought to you by Intuit, the proud makers of TurboTax, Mint, and QuickBooks. And again, thank you guys. We really do appreciate you. And Jim could not have said it more eloquently for proving us right. For Jim Trotter, Thomas Warren, I'm Steve Weich. We are the HU Mob, and we are out.